Imagine being able to take a train around Oahu's leeward coast, stop off in Haleiwa, and continue on to Kahuku. Or, if you prefer, right from town to central Oahu. There was a time when you could do that. The Oahu Railway and Land Company was the brainchild of one Benjamin Dillingham, and like other projects we could name, was greeted with a good deal of skepticism. History buff Ray Lovell is with us in our studio to remember Dillingham's folly. Hi, Ray. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for the invitation, Chris. Glad to be here.
Well, Mr. Dillingham was quite a fellow, wasn't he? Really a real entrepreneurial spirit in that 19th century can-do manner.
Yeah, he had arrived here on a ship. He was a sailor, and he broke his leg while he was ashore, mm-hmm. had to stay, couldn't ride back, got a job in a hardware store, and eventually went into business for himself and became a very wealthy man and a mover and shaker. Mm-hmm. All in a relatively short period of time.
And was in tight with the monarchy as well.
Oh, definitely. And he wanted to build a railroad. And a lot of people said, why?
Yeah.
He wanted a train that ran originally from Honolulu out to the Pearl River Basin, which today we call Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And people were saying, well, why? There's really nothing much out there. Well, his idea was, if I can get a train out there, people will move there, we'll sell house lots, we'll do development. And beyond that, there's the agriculture. So we could haul agricultural products back into Honolulu, get them on board ships. And he had even a little bit of tourism in mind.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't tourism from outside, but a place where people in Honolulu could escape to even a more genteel surroundings. And so
this is what, 1880s, Ray?
1880s. It was 1889, actually. I think that's the right time, when the legislature approved his request, and the king, King Kalakaua, who was very much supporting, signed it. One really interesting thing, the request, the approval, stipulated there'd be no tax money involved in building this railroad.
That this is an unseemly thing for government to be involved in?
I don't know if it was that or they didn't have the money or some of them were skeptical.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Dillingham ran into a number of problems initially, but he seemed to solve all of them. He was pushing to get the railroad built as quickly as possible out to what is now Pearl City. And the engines that he had ordered from the mainland hadn't come in, and he had already promised his friends and supporters and people who had bought stock that he was going to give them a ride on a certain date, which was his birthday,
mm-hmm.
on the train. Well, he managed to buy a small engine that had been used in a sand mining operation that would fit on those tracks, and he got two flat cars, and he sent out the invitations, and the Royal Hawaiian Band was there, and all of these people dressed in their best, and the men had the white tropical suits on.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
The engineer running the small engine wasn't familiar with it. And whatever he did, when they hit the main line and he opened up the throttle, out of the smokestack came smoke, soot, and steam. And they covered all these people. I'm not sure if they really got upset, probably did, some of them.
All those beautiful white outfits covered with soot, yeah.
But it worked.
Mm-hmm.
The development took place. They hauled passengers up, like we said, up to the North Shore, and the Haleiwa Hotel was built, and that became a favorite of people in Honolulu. They hauled the agricultural products back, and the railroad was really important. And as you said, they had a line that went all the way up to north of Waiawa.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked very well, and it led to a lot of the earlier development in those areas.
It really changed the face of the economy in those areas, didn't it? I mean, now, for one thing, it made sugar plantations viable because they were able to get to market far quicker, right?
Get to market quicker, and it was probably cheaper to do it that way than however they were getting the sugar products to the ships.
Yeah,
but it was a boon for the economy, and of course it helped continue to enrich Dillingham.
And lasted how long, Ray?
Well, that's a sad part of the story. Just a little over a half a century. It was extremely important during the war years. They hauled soldiers, they hauled munitions, they hauled all kinds of work like that. But when World War II was over, what had also been happening was better roads were built, more powerful trucks. Mm-hmm. People had automobiles on those roads, and fewer people were riding the train. And then in April of 1946, less than a year after the war, was the terrible tsunami. And that was the one that was did so much damage on the Big Island and other islands. In fact, it wiped out the railroad on the Big Island, the one that ran up the Hamakua coast. Mm-hmm. Caused a lot of damage to the Oahu Railway here, and they repaired it. But the business was not viable anymore. And so at the end of 1947, they made their last passenger run. And pretty much the Oahu Railway Company was gone. However, there's a little bit of that railroad left. Mm-hmm. And the Hawaiian Railway Society has a train yard in Ewa and Renton Road. And on the weekends, they run a train up to Kahe Point and back. They don't run it during the weekdays because it has to go across Kalailoa Boulevard and the road to Campbell Industrial Park, and that would be untenable stopping traffic for the train. Mm-hmm. But on the weekends, it's different, and the train makes a couple of runs, and people can go out and ride a train and get a sense of what it was like, you know, back in the early part of the 20th century.
Wherever there are trains in America, Ray, there are railroad buffs. Trains seem to attract a kind of historical loyalty that few other things do, don't they?
They do, and I have this idea, this thought. 100 years from now, 150 years from now, whatever transportation we use, maybe it's hoverboards, I don't know.
Right, right.
But there's this section of what's being built today for the elevated railroad, and people go out there and they pay their money and they ride one of those cars, yeah, those, you know, electrified cars, and think about the old days when that's how people got across Oahu.
Well, you know, in the old days, I mean, it's in so many ways you can see stories like the rail story in Hawaii that are sort of reflections in miniature of what happened on the U.S. mainland, the same kind of dynamics. Rail is king, rail dominates, rail opens up territories, creates business opportunities. I mean, rail made the mainland USA.
It did, and to a large extent, it did the same thing here. There were rail lines on all the principal islands, and they were for agriculture and also for hauling passengers.
Wasn't it the sugar industry that was the real impetus for the construction of rail?
It was the sugar industry and later pineapple, because they could also bring in the pineapple to the canning plant that were out in Iwilei.
It's remarkable if you look at, just take the last century and look at the major shifts. Well, let's take all of post-contact Hawaii history and look at how many different economic drivers came and went, right? Mm-hmm. Sandalwood, whaling, you know, things that were once the backbone of the local economy, completely, for all practical purposes, extinct, replaced by something else. Maybe a 30-50-year cycle replaced again, right? Mm-hmm.
I remember when I moved here in 1970, it was sugar and pineapple that were still the backbone of the economy. Tourism played an important role, and of course the military has too. Mm-hmm. But now it's tourism and the military and of course, new developments and things like that. But it's always in flux.
If we're around long enough, Ray, we get to see historical trends play out right before our eyes, don't we?
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Raymond.
Hey, thank you.
Ray Lovell is an amateur historian whose Ray Lovell's Journal stories aired on KHON-TV from the early 80s to the late 90s.